Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
When I turned 12, my dad wanted to marry me off too. I was basically looking at my mom like, we're really going to continue this?
Nah, me and Ari actually met like back in Harvard and shit. She kept asking me for like help with their homework and shit.
You went to Harvard?
Okay, yeah, fine. What?
You went to Harvard?
Of course I did. Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people know this actually, so this is like very exclusive.
Inside scoop?
This is the inside scoop.
Oh my god, here it is, guys.
I was like 10 years old on subways. I had no business being in the places that I was. And my mom was like, you're going to get like kidnapped.
Today we are welcoming our first guest of 2025. We have Miss Arya Mustari. If you guys don't know her, if you're living under a rock, a little bit about her is that she is a social entrepreneur. She created My Soli Foundation, which is a nonprofit that aims to end child marriage in Bangladesh. We talk about so many different things, but also the fact that she's a low-income student who had to prevail and go against so many odds to, you know, pass through college and become the first person in her family to attend college. She went to Harvard University. We talk about all of the different ways that she applied for this program and all of the different skills that she learned from this. We also talk about her mother being a victim of child marriage and how she is paying it forward for other women before her and after her. So if you guys are excited and willing to listen and watch this incredible episode about her story, make sure to keep on watching and listening.
Oh my God, it's true. We got another episode of Difficult Ish coming on right now.
Yeah,
this is Difficult Ish. It's a podcast about different South Asian narratives, and it's hosted by my co-host right here,
Ahua Khan,
and it's hosted by her co-host right here, Masha Munir. And I don't know if you can see, but we got someone else in the building right now.
But only know if you're watching the video.
Yeah, so if you read the title.
If you're watching the title, you know. Make sure to like and subscribe before we even get started. Yeah. But we got someone special today.
Who is
it? Got our first 2025, I was about to say 2024, first 2025 Mm-mm. guest of the year in the new apartment as well.
Yeah.
And we're in for a treat, okay?
Oh my God, who is
we
it?
We got Miss Arya right here.
Yeah!
A power woman. Obviously, I have like a little introduction for you. So, Arya Mustari is a social entrepreneur of girls' education and the founder of My Soli Foundation, an organization that aims to end child marriage in Bangladesh. She is a Harvard 2024 grad who worked hard despite all the hardships that came her way. Through her various social media platforms, she gives big sister advice and helps women become more independent and unlearn their traumas while also inspiring them to become their best selves.
Oh my God.
So grateful to call Arya a dear friend of mine
and
have her on the podcast today to share her story.
Oh my God.
And Miss Girl came all the way from Buffalo to New York.
She came all the way from Buffalo to do this podcast.
Yeah.
That she's not so doing nothing else. To have
you. You are too kind.
That's insane.
Thank you.
Arya, how you feeling? What's going
on? I'm feeling really good.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm back with you guys.
Yeah, I mean,
it's been a long time since the summer.
Yeah, we've been trying to get Arya, well, just hang out in general because we don't see each other as often just because we do live like a little bit further away from one another. But we've been trying to have you on the podcast for such a long time now because
Facts.
It's you, right? It's like it's you of all people.
Yes,
so
sir.
We've been trying. But like when we do hang out, it's like us playing pool, us being in the present moment, having fun, living like we're still a teenager,
right.
You know?
Yep.
And it's just like it's long overdue.
Living up our 20s.
Overdue. And we're out here. We got it done.
Yeah.
How'd you meet Arya?
How did we meet? We actually just met online, right?
I think so. Mm.
Did I DM you or did you DM me?
I don't know. I know we were mutuals.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think we FaceTimed one another for something or the other. And then we just like clicked right away.
And then we got lunch at like this this rooftop bar.
The Mexican rooftop bar.
Yeah.
And I remember I actually made a TikTok video about this right after. And I was like, oh my God, I found my soul sister. Aww. Oh my God. I was like, I made this video and I was like, I feel so energized by her.
Yeah.
And you just know, like, when you meet somebody and you're like, okay, this is it.
Aria was the type of person, like, right when I met you, I felt not only energized, but I felt like the connection where, like, you could support me, I can support you. There was no hate or like jealousy, you know? And it felt genuine, you know? It didn't feel like it was a, like an act. It didn't feel like it was fake. And I remember after we got lunch or dinner, we went to like the piers, and I think we just like looked at the water for a second.
Just like chat. It was like the perfect first date. Yeah. Sorry.
Nah, me and Aria actually met like back in Harvard and shit. We had a couple classes and shit. She kept asking me for like help with their homework and shit.
You went to Harvard?
Okay, yeah, fine. What?
You went to Harvard?
Of course I did. Yeah. Yeah, no, like, that's how I met Aria.
He's actually first in his class. I don't know how you
top of the class. I didn't know.
How didn't you know?
I didn't know.
Yeah, she's always like looking over my shoulder and shit.
She was like trying to copy off of you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It is what it is.
We're like the ADHD students. Oh, wow. In front of the class.
In front of the class.
Doing our best.
Raising your hands constantly.
Yeah,
I can really imagine that.
It is what it is. It is what it is. So what's up, Blake? What's up? What are we doing? How you want to start this off?
Yeah, I'm excited about this episode because like you have such a unique story, and I feel like you've shared it like obviously across your platforms and with your nonprofit, but like our audience doesn't know like you personally. So I'm so excited for you to actually share that side of you. And obviously we're going to talk about like your upbringing, we're going to talk about your journey, the fact that you went to Harvard, the fact that you started MySoli, and just who you are as a person. But like, we're going to keep it loose, we're going to keep it like, you know, who you are as a person. Because what I love especially about being friends with you and like some of my creator friends is that like we see this amazing side of you on social media where it's like big sister advice and like helping women become better and like become more independent and unlearn this trauma, right? But then also like the real like friend side of you is just so like goofy, like ha ha hee hee. And I always tell you, I was like, if you become like the funny side of you on social media, like everyone's gonna fall in love with you even more, you know? Yeah. Because like Aria is also genuinely so funny, and she has these like mannerisms that like not many people see, and people only see like the serious like Harvard entrepreneur side, which is amazing. But like I'm so grateful that like I know who you are as a person, you know.
God bless.
So hopefully that comes out like in this episode.
I think it will. It comes out with you guys really easily, for good or for worse. Yeah. It does.
I wonder why. I wonder why.
It's like unfortunate, but also
unfortunate. But
we're pretty serious people.
We bring out the worst and the best in her.
We're pretty serious people. So what's up? Like, but, how you want to start it off?
Yeah, let's get started. Okay, so Aria, you were born in New York.
Yep.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about your upbringing. Let's talk about who you are before college, before going to high school, or even in high school, as the eldest daughter, but also someone who was kind of like the manager and the person that everyone referred to in your family, right? Like, how were you in school? How were you as a person back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
That's a loaded question.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good foundation to who a person is before, you know? Like, it gives you open ground to kind of talk about whatever you want to, you know?
Yeah, Go ahead.
Yeah. Up to you, buddy.
Okay. Wow. Where do I begin? So, yes, I was born in Brooklyn. I was born in Coney Island Hospital, actually.
Oh, wow.
No one really knows
this. God.
Deep in
Love
Brooklyn.
Coney Island.
Is that still end there? Of the F train,
it's like my favorite place in the world.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, I was born, like, deep, deep, deep in Brooklyn. And eventually I'd moved to Queens, but I had also gone to high school in Manhattan. Mm. So, I was, like, a proper city mutt.
Mm.
But, yeah, so a lot of my, I guess, upbringing was in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had a really hard time getting along with people, and I think I was like pretty outcasted, actually. No one knows this.
Why?
Because I had to grow up so young. So my sister's like 5 years younger than me, and I basically remember raising her right when she came out of the womb.
Yeah.
And I was 5 years old. I was I was so freaked out by her because I was like, first of all, there's this like little creature with like weird hands, and like now I'm supposed to take care
of
the
weird hands.
How does that make sense?
The first thing I said for the Bengali people watching this, the first thing I said like in the hospital room with my sister like out of my mom, and she's just like carrying her. And I was like, "Hat guli bhooter moto." And my mom is like,
straight
"Get
away.
Out of here!"
Which means her hands look like a ghost, like
a monster's
hand.
A
monster. Oh my god.
And my sister has much nicer hands than me now. Yeah. And she talks about that all the time.
Thank god. I was holding over your head too.
That's the first thing you said to me when I on this planet.
No hi, hello.
No, how are you?
No, welcome to the world. Yeah. That's actually wild. No.
5-year-old me was quite freaked out.
Damn. Why did you feel like you had to take care of her at such a young age? Because at five, you're just a baby too. Yeah. You know, you're five. You're literally five. Yeah.
I think it definitely comes with having such a young mom.
Yeah.
So part of the My Soli story that we'll get into later is that obviously my mom got married really young as a child bride. But also a lot of that made us Gilmore Girls. So it's she was really just real with me from when we were when I was a kid and when we were kids, because she was also a kid. My mom got married as a teenager, so she was really young, obviously. And by the time I was born, I think my mom was max 19 or 20. Oh, wow. And by the time my sister was born, she was 24, 25. So she was that's our age, Mo.
I know.
It's really young,
very young
to have your second kid.
Yeah.
With a man who's so much older. So it's we were definitely very close. And I don't think she saw me. She definitely saw me as her daughter, but she also saw me as a friend.
Yeah.
And I think the eldest daughter responsibilities came up very, very quickly where it was you're your sister's protector. Mm-hmm. You're this, you're that. So it's that came out really, really good. And you should understand more. And, all of these different things that come up right when you become an eldest daughter and you're you're not the baby. You're not even a child anymore.
Yeah.
And obviously that gets exacerbated when, you grow up in poverty. So I think that was a big part of it. And I think because of the chaos in the house and in that environment, even being in school, because you have to grow up so fast, it's all of these kids are being kids, but I don't feel like I'm a kid.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a really weird feeling to feel all of these kids don't have any stress in their life. They're just playing in the playground.
Yeah.
And you're already this mature kid.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of called... You're kind of called an old soul for being the mature kid.
When you
but
don't
also,
even want to be.
It's also trauma. Yeah. I don't know if I'm an old soul or if it's just trauma.
Where it's
could be
you're
both.
Mature for your age. Where it's I don't want to be. I'm glad you think so.
Yeah.
But we talked about it recently in one of our parentified episodes where we talked about just being the eldest daughter and having these obligations put on you even when it wasn't necessarily purposely put on you.
Yeah.
But you still felt that guilt and that feeling of responsibility. And
yeah.
I'm sure your mom didn't really know any better. It's not she told you physically oh, take care of your sister. I'm going to take care of you. Blah, blah. I'm sure she didn't mean to do it. But you have this overlying responsibility to do it just because you feel that's the role you have to do, you know? Yeah.
You know what's really interesting about that too? My mom and I recently had a little argument about this because I had kind of brought it up and she was basically I didn't ask you to do any of that. And that's always a hard, I think I think any eldest daughter can probably agree. That's always a hard conversation to have because it's I know you didn't ask, but I felt that I had that responsibility to do it. And it kind of goes into later on when I was in school and I just started cutting I know my persona is Harvard and stuff like that, but I mean I was cutting school I was not a good student. I had ADHD. I was my biggest priority in school was making sure my little sister was taken care of or my family was taken care of. So naturally, first of all, you're not good at school because you have ADHD.
Right.
I'm not picking up things as well as the other kids. And then I'm I have all of these things in at home. So then I became really rebellious really quickly.
Mm.
And then I was called biadob, I think, for most of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I still get it. I still get that comment in my adult years.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can
stop.
Do one thing, not even one thing out of hand, but I can just be living my life and I get called the worst insult sometimes.
Right, right.
When you were starting to get graduate high school and enter college and stuff, what was your plan? What was your goal? What did you want to be when you were older? I don't know if you had just always thought about this foundation that you started, but maybe before that, what was your plan to do
in high school or in college?
In starting to graduate, high school, starting college, kind of like around that period.
Yeah.
I guess before like the idea of like starting the foundation started. What was your plan?
I think in high school, it's really funny because sometimes you like see little parts of your path like throughout like when you're young.
Yeah.
But in high school, I always wanted to do something related to charity.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting because like I got in, the first club that I was doing was like Red Cross.
Wow.
And then the next year, I started the UNICEF chapter in my high school.
Of course you started it.
It's crazy.
Real one.
And it's like, and then I'm like raising funds for like Syrian refugees and like doing these bake sales and like doing these like little high school stuff. And a lot of that I started to be able to do because my mom decided to divorce my dad and like we were able to like spread our wings and like, you know, get out of the oppressive environment. And I was like, wait, I kind of like school. It was like when you don't have that stress at home and that chaos at home, just that little bit of privilege of just having an okay home environment. Changes everything. So now I'm in school, I'm like, oh my god, I love being in school. I love starting these clubs, like I like doing okay in school. And then luckily Posse had picked me up, so getting the Posse Foundation completely changed my life. Also a really big inspiration for my Soli. Like if I didn't have a scholarship for an inner city kid that like gave you full tuition for like a super competitive school, none of my life would look the same like at all.
How did you get that like what work did you do to get that type of award?
I think it's the leadership. It's like obviously, you know, the story, like they, it's really intense. It's like three rounds of interviews. They like really get to know you and how you are in a group setting. So it's really wild, actually. I mean, I'm sure you know, as like a New York City kid, but like any New York City kid that had been nominated or like went through this, they have like a bunch of these kids in a room and like they'll be like act like monkeys or like act like gorillas. What? It's crazy. So it's like round one of the scholarship, they'll just be like, oh yeah, act like monkeys. And it's basically, if it's the three of us acting like monkeys, and Mashnoon is like the super alpha monkey, and he's like
he is naturally
and he's like kind of overpowering other people. He's like trying to like, you know, shadow you me or something like that. They notice these things. So it's like there's people around the room that are just kind of watching you and just seeing how you behave in a group. And after, like, I mean, they like weed out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kids and then end with like 10 kids that are like change makers and leaders and like genuine and like people that are actually gonna, or they try their best to get them.
Yeah.
And like people that are actually gonna like be in a posse and be in a group and actually like support each other and see each other. And it's like, in this competitive environment, how are you gonna act? Are you gonna step over other people? Are you gonna overpower other people? It's fascinating.
What a unique way of the interview process.
When you're getting $250,000 in scholarship, you want to make sure it's going to the right kid, you know.
How do you feel like, you said you had ADHD and you didn't grow up in like the best, most supportive household, you know, it wasn't exactly the healthiest, especially with your dad. How do you feel like at that age you were able to still retain some of your like mental health and like still kind of persevere in school? Like, I know you said that like your dad left from the picture and that's why you were a little bit more motivated to get into it. But I feel like being in high school, especially at that age when you have like so much turmoil and then you also don't know how to like handle your ADHD or your mental health, like how do you even move forward? I feel like a lot of people lose hope at that point, you know.
Yeah, I failed so many classes freshman year, like that transition from the divorce to like actually finding your wings and like being out of that oppressive environment. It was horrible. I failed gym. I failed gym. I got like a bunch of like D's and stuff, or like C's and D's in classes. I mean, I missed out on so many foundations from like cutting class to like have to take care of my sister or like have to take care of something that went on in the family. So no, like the mental stress that the combination of having ADHD but also missing real foundations from school, that was really hard. So it's like you almost have to work twice as hard. And those are the things that people don't really think about with like first gen kids. It's like when you're the first in your family to go to college and you have no support system whatsoever, it's really tough.
I feel like especially with your story on like where you are now and just like how successful you are, you know, especially in like the outside perspective, there have been so many roadblocks in your path that have essentially could have stopped you, you know. But like you didn't let that end your career or end your life, and then you kept moving on from that. Like, you didn't take no for an answer, you didn't take rejection, and you worked hard towards it despite your odds. Like, you know, you were low income, you didn't really have the funds to go to school or go to college, you didn't have like the best environment in your home, and despite all of that, you still like persevered. And I feel like that is such a like great lesson, especially for the kids that feel like, oh, you know, this is my home situation, or this is, you know, what's going on in my life, I'm not going to be able to ever be successful. Because I get it, like, especially if you feel like you don't have the money to do it, or you haven't had like the positive representation for someone to look up to, it feels like you're not going to be able to succeed. But like, I want people to know that you've done it, and there are so many like people who have like beat the odds. Obviously it's going to be harder for you to do it, like, if you don't have all of those like connections or money, but it is so possible to do that, you know. Like, you can't let just one failure or like one rejection just stop you from your destiny, you know.
Thank you.
Like, here you are now. That's crazy.
Yeah You're doing the thing.
You want to talk about My Soli now, or do you have any?
Yes we can absolutely get into it. My Soli Foundation. My sister moved to Atlanta like 6 years ago, and when she moved
she
shout out my sister. By the time this is out, she's married. Goodness gracious. She moved to Atlanta, and she moved there for a job, and for like the first year or 2 years, she was just like hanging out with her coworkers. But I remember like we had this phone call maybe 4 years ago or something, and she was like, hey, like, I really want to like start doing something for like the Bengali community, like for Bengali people. And she was like, you know, I don't want to just go volunteer, I don't want to just donate some money to something, like, I actually want to do something like valuable. And I think at that time I had started making TikToks. I had like met her, and like my sister kind of saw that we were starting to meet some people, like some Bengali people online, and I think maybe that kind of inspired my sister to try to do something as well. So I remember Mo was already friends with you, and I had seen your foundation, and I just mentioned it to my sister. I was like, Mo's friend has this thing, like, I send it to you. And then one way or another, it kind of got set up, and then she started working with you, and my sister absolutely loved it, and it really, really made her so happy, because she actually felt like she was providing something more than just kind of like a volunteer shift.
She's the best.
So
my team loves her so much.
Me too. So yeah, My Soli Foundation, please tell the people what this is, how it came about, and like when you started it, and yeah, just kind of all about it.
Love your sister so much. Shout by the way, if there's other people that are watching this and want to get involved in a corporate way or with their corporate companies the way that his sister did, feel free to reach out, because that was honestly like the best way that somebody could have like used their resources or their like privilege to help out. But basically, My Soli. So, inspired by my mom, which we kind of talked about a little bit, but my mom was a victim of a child marriage at 16 years old. She was pulled out of school at 15, married off by 16, to my dad, who was double her age. And basically, they both immigrated to New York City. They both immigrated to Brooklyn. And my dad had a fabric store in Midtown. And my mom had me in Coney Island Hospital, like we talked about. It was a pretty, I guess, oppressive and traumatic situation from there, because he wasn't really around. But he started using my mom as free labor very, very quickly in his fabric store. It was a very, very small thing. And my mom fought to work, which is like really interesting too. Like, she really wanted to help out in the family. I don't think I've ever told anybody this, but she was like, I don't, you know, want to just like, let me help, like, let me help make this family money. Like, let me help, you know, contribute and like make, you know, like have bread. Basically when he realized that he could basically use this labor and like not give the family any fruits of the labor, he just continued that on for like years. And that's where the biadabi comes in, because I think like I must have been like 8 or 9 when I started telling my mom like, you should divorce him.
I love that, at that age. Wow.
And my mom's like, why are you trying to break up the family?
Right.
Yeah, already. Yeah, go to school.
My mom is like, there's no way, biado, man. She is so mad.
Yeah.
And I remember just telling her, I was like, we'd be so much better off. I'm like 10 years old. Like, I don't even understand that version of myself. Like, I can't believe I was saying all of these things when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It was just so bizarre now that I'm saying it out loud. But I always told her, I was like, we could do so much better. We deserve better. We're living in like a rat and roach infested apartment in like Jamaica. It was horrendous. And like, my dad had a store and we never saw any of the money from it. And like, rent was all like barely paid. My sister has a lot of these memories about like the water not working or like, and I think I blocked it out, like the trauma, but yeah. Like, she's like, yeah, our water, like our tap wouldn't turn on. Like, she'll say it so casually, or like, yeah. You know, the electricity bills weren't paid. Like, do you not remember this? And my trauma blocks so much of that out. So basically, that went on for like 12 years. And when I turned 12, my dad wanted to marry me off too. And I was basically looking at my mom like, we're really going to continue this? And she was like, yeah, I'm going to divorce him. So that's basically like my mom stepping up and having that courage to finally divorce him is basically what helped change our lives. And I wouldn't have been able to like get to any part of my education or any part of anything that I'm doing without her actually breaking the cycle for me. And that's basically the inspiration of my Soli Foundation. Like, there's so many other mothers or people that don't have the privilege to break that cycle of child marriage and just, you know, put their foot down and say, no, I'm not gonna make my daughter get married.
Yeah.
And like, just think about all of the other issues that it comes with, right? Like, when you're married as a child, it's adolescent pregnancy,
yeah,
rape, DV, yeah, like, you know, really, really hard and like terrible things that happen. And that cycle that gets broken like fixes like a generation of women. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Like, our kids won't have to deal with that, and that's like an entire cycle that's broken. So that's basically what it is.
I feel like the beautiful thing is that, I mean, you guys are so Gilmore Girls coded, right? Like, like, the mom, your mom finally like stood up for herself and the family and broke these cycles when it came to you. You know, she was like, yeah, I'm going to put my foot down and we're not going to let this continue, you know. Yeah. But before that, she was willing to sacrifice and like let herself go through that, which is so horrible. But like, you know, sometimes you have no choice, right?
Yeah.
But I think also a beautiful thing with this story is that like, she was able to gain the financial like background and skills in that shop and make a name for herself beyond, you know, after the divorce.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of women stay in these like really toxic and horrible relationships because they can't make money for themselves, or they don't know who they are beyond that relationship.
Yep.
You know?
Yep, yep.
So
yep.
I think it's great. Like, obviously her situation was not amazing, right?
Yeah.
Her getting married off at such a young age is not good, but her being able to persevere and still use like the things she learned to her advantage is such a great thing. You know, like, she had the intellectual like abilities to know from a young age, like, okay, I'm still gonna go to work with him, make my own, like, you know, learn how to make money and learn how to work a shop, and then I'm gonna start this like whole business on my own after that, you know.
That's fine.
So it was like a mastermind plan. Like, maybe she didn't know it initially,
she didn't know it, yeah,
but it's like it ended up working in her favor. You know.
Yeah.
So that's like such
and
a
that's the basis
thing
of it. It's like the idea that education can genuinely, like, my mom's accidental education, because she was pulled out of school, right? Her accidental education in business, like negotiation, sales, all of these things, these real world skills that she's getting just running a shop in Midtown. You can't make that up. So it's like, basically the idea of My Soli is, what if you just did that before, so they don't have to go through having a child, going through these traumatic things, that another daughter doesn't have to go through, that another son doesn't have to go through that. What if you just prevented all of that from happening and just taught them those business skills, taught them those leadership skills, confidence, and all of these things before? Like, so many lives could be changed. That's basically the basis.
I remember I think 2 years ago you showed me like one of your lesson plans for My Soli, and it was just like so informative. Like, the topics that you guys were covering for the classes, like, I have not seen anything like that. So like, do you want to talk a little bit about just what kind of things you teach these girls? How do they get accepted into these type of programs or workshops? And you know, like, the beautiful stories that have come out of it.
And and to add on that, I think I just want to know a little bit about, you know, I think when it comes to people starting like a charity or foundation, a lot of time it's like, I don't want to say it's like a side project, but it's like it's something additional that they do on top of like their 9 to 5 or whatever. But it's like, that's like what you do. So Like, I just want to know, like, why, what made you go all into,
like,
that?
Like, full-fledged into
instead
it.
Of, like, you know, doing that with, like, some other people, you know, making it something. It's like, you're in it, you know? So
yeah. And, like, not keeping it as a side.
Yeah. Because, like, you also left your corporate job, right? We'll talk about that. But, yeah. First talk about just, like, the intention with it, what My Soul even is.
Yeah.
And then you can talk about, you know.
Okay, like, the curriculum first.
Yeah.
So some of the things that we teach the girls is finance, leadership, confidence, and entrepreneurship. So to break that down, they're basically learning skill sets that the sons are not learning. Like, just to boil it down, a lot of these families, for good or for worse, I think a misconception is that they hate their daughters. And a lot of the times when even Bangladeshis, like, it doesn't matter who, it's not just, like, even, like, white people or Western people, the idea is that you absolutely hate your daughter and that's why you'd want to marry her off to, like, a man. But oftentimes, if you talk to these families, they just genuinely want their daughter to have the most secure future she can.
Yeah.
And sometimes the only way that they see that is marrying her off to a rich man.
Yeah.
And when you have that kind of empathy and just, like, understand, okay, got it, this is about money. So this is about, like, you know, you want to make sure your daughter's safe and secure, and you only see one way of doing that, because alternatives are she's in the streets, trafficking, like, other horrendous things. So like, that's kind of what you see as the best path. So then when you understand that, you're like, okay, the problem is money, the problem is finance, the problem is, like, you know, you obviously want the best for her. How do we both achieve that together? So basically, we went on the ground and we talked to, like, all of these, like, you know, really amazing Bangladeshi female leaders, university students, all of these people who are involved. And we basically concocted all of these different lessons that they get. So one of the things is, like, microfinance, like, how to open up a bank account, like, you know, how to manage money. How are you in a team? If you're a leader, you need to understand empathy. You need to understand sisterhood. Because obviously, big part of writing this curriculum, it's all over the curriculum. Yeah. They're so loyal and kind to each other. It's insane. It's just so beautiful to see. Like, and the way that we select them too is very similar to Posse, where it's like, you know, there's a lot of kids that are probably really, really good for it, but we want the leaders.
Yeah.
Like, we want the most lasting impact. So if we have these 10 girls who are chosen based off of leadership, we know that they'll be able to inspire other people. Like, Posse choosing me, that I'm so grateful for, is the reason why I can help all of these girls in Bangladesh. You know what I mean? Or I would have never had that privilege or that opportunity. I wouldn't have found my co-founder at Babson. Like, there's all of this huge butterfly effect that happened from that. So my favorite one that I think I showed you, my favorite unit is the beauty unit in leadership and confidence, where basically we teach the young girls to feel, like, really beautiful in their own skin, because there won't be, like, houses in Bangladesh, like, there's giant ads of Fair and Lovely. Like, you won't find, like, proper roads, but somehow there's a billboard that's, like, 17 feet tall. And it's Fair and Lovely. It's outrageous.
Like, even if in America, colorism is still such a big thing within the South Asian community, like, obviously it's still going to be prevalent there.
Exactly. So, like, if you ask them at the beginning of the unit to describe what beauty is to them, they'll be like, fair, you know, skinny, tall, long black hair, like, you know, like the classic Bengali beauty. And then at the end of the unit, they're like, no, we are all beautiful. Yeah, we are. And it's just so beautiful, because we basically go through media literacy, and we specifically go through Kajol. If you guys know her, she's a Bengali actress who's in Bollywood. And when she starts her career, she's like our skin color. In like the 90s. And then every like 10 to 15 years, she gets lighter because she's going through bleaching treatments. And they love it. They find it so fascinating. They're like, how is somebody so beautiful still so insecure about their color? Like, that late. Do you know what I mean? Like, that late in their lives. And, you know, they're not. And we basically talk about how, you know, people might find that infantile and, like, why are you talking about beauty? But, like, how you feel in the surface of yourself is so important for leadership. Like, we have to feel confident in the way that we look, or how are we going to stand up in front of people? And, you know what I mean?
It's all interconnected, too. It's like, you know, if we talk about wellness and self-care, that sounds kind of, like, you know, cliche. Like, why are we talking about doing your skincare routine? But it's, like, having that routine, but also having self-confidence externally, it plays a part with your internal confidence as well, and it makes you more motivated to actually, like, strive to be a better person. You know,
exactly.
So I think, like, you know, financial independence or learning about finances on top of, like, it's all connected, all interconnected, in some way, you know.
Yep.
So I love that. That's like one of my favorite topics as well.
Yay.
You know, you wanna, what was that question you
had? Just about making it full time and like really being like all in on it. I know like before you mentioned that you had always been into like doing charitable work and, you know, doing things for other people, but you know, I feel like with going all in on this foundation, you're like skipping out on the opportunity to like, you know, really make money in the beginning, like for yourself. Like you, she said you left your 9-to-5, like you left your corporate job to go into this. So I would just love to know like your thought process into like really like why go all in on this type of thing.
I joke about this all the time, but I was such a bad employee.
Oh wow.
we can talk about this. Goodness gracious. I'm such a C minus employee. I'm such a bad.
Kind of like what I talked about, I was really, really bad. Like since I was a kid, I did not listen to anybody. I was like 10 years old on subways, like without asking.
You're like the subway surfer.
I was the subway surfer. No, like it was outrageous. Like I'm on 10th Avenue with like nobody. Like I had no business being in the places that I was in middle school or in elementary school, and my mom was like, you're gonna get like kidnapped. Like she's like literally. Like not only can I not scold you or beat you enough for this, like you're also like you don't listen,
right?
Like I'm so bad at it. So I've always been like that, like since I was a kid, just absolutely rebellious, definitely beyond the, like all of, you know what I mean? One part of it is that I was really, really bad at listening to authority. And I think part of the ADHD thing is that like, you always want to do things so differently. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you went through the same thing, but I tried to do like the very normal route. So I started my Soli while I was still in college. I was 19, very, very depressed when I started it. And I was like, I want to do something that's going to, you know, help young girls and like, you know, change the lives of these young girls. Because I was like, I feel so privileged to be here. And I was, you know, I feel like I had to give back in some way for like all of the other girls that could have had my path. That my mom broke the cycle for me, or my mom's path where nobody broke the cycle for her. So I was like, I want to do something. It gave me so much purpose in like the imposter syndrome and depression that I had in my undergrad. And so I try to do the normal route that you would do after undergrad, which is like go to a corporate job. So I was like, okay, school was really hard, obviously, because I didn't have the foundations. And I was like, okay, but a job's going to be really, like, making money is going to be so easy because you're basically hired to, like, do something. And when you learn how to do that something, you're just going to get money. And I started that job, and it was actually a really, really great experience. And I think everything, I have nothing bad to say about, like, the company or the way that they treated, like, I didn't have any, like, workplace, like, bad, what's the word? Like bad memories or anything like that. I just think I was so occupied with wanting to do my own thing that I was like, when a boss or like someone had told me to, you know, do X thing, and I was like, well, that, like, I could be doing so much more with my time. You know? Like, not in a mean way, because I would never want to sound like one job is better than the other, but I think for my brain and for the way that like I like to do things creatively, I was like, I can't just like listen to someone tell me to do something and just do it.
But yeah, I think that says a lot about your purpose and how serious you are with your intention, because like you knew what your your path was in life. Like you were so head first with like what you wanted to do and your reasoning for it and like helping girls, where you didn't want anything to get in your way, you know? And I feel like it's very similar with me and you, where like when you know your purpose and it's so strong, like you're not gonna let any adversity stop you, you know? And I also think it's the same thing with like being a rebel and like, you know, growing up in a rebellious like upbringing, where like you can't stand someone else bossing you around. You're like, oh, I can just do it myself and be my own boss, you
exactly
know?
And it's like really weird things. I don't know if you went through the same thing. It's not like I've ever had like I obviously quit and like I had those conversations like that weren't bad at all, because I feel like if I was a different kind of person, I would have definitely been able to stay. But it was just so interesting because I always wanted to like do more, because that leadership kind of stays within you, you. And I'm like, oh, but what if we did this DEI thing?
Yeah.
And what if we did this CSR thing? And it's like, you're a junior consultant. Can you like sit in your place? It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. And they were really nice about it, but it's all, it's like this, like when you have this innate leadership or creativity and you want to do something. And it's like, that's kind of what I mean by like being a bad employee. They're like, just sit and do the Excel. And I'm like, I physically cannot do this. I'm like,
one of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Yeah. I need the eldest daughter in you, where you're like, that. I need to just, if I see something wrong or if I feel like something can improve, I want to do it myself. Not depend on anyone else.
Yeah, you know? I remember my first coffee shop job. I was trying to, you know, fix everything. Like, I was trying to make a coffee shop playlist and, you know, make a stop wearing uniforms and stuff. And my manager had to tell me, like, yo, like, chill out. Like, you're just here to make coffee. Yeah. And I was like, yo, like, there's so many things that can be improved, like, by this place. And then he came and fired me. Like, after I, like,
rebelled a little bit. I rebelled a little bit.
Is that true?
It's a true story. It was in a very white neighborhood. It was like my first nice job, like at like a nice coffee shop. And you know me, I'm out here playing 21 Savage on, you know,
there's no way on the iPod.
I'm playing the but you know, all right, not 21 Savage, but I'm playing like some hip hop. I'm playing, you know, I'm not playing Billy Ray Cyrus on, you know, on the iPod. Like,
Lil Nas.
I'm playing like some nice music, and then I won the song. Someone complained. They told the manager. Manager told me, "Yo, stop playing that." I was like, "All right, bro." I kept playing it, and then he came and fired me. It's a true story.
So that was absolutely needed.
Huh?
That was like
absolutely needed. You know, like, cause, you know, like, no, I like really
that
started
was, like,
a trend.
Meant, like that fire. Yeah, was meant for
I still got like 100 followers on that playlist.
Who followed you on that playlist?
A lot. Yo, I had so many people because you got to understand back at that time, back in like 2018, this wasn't a thing.
Right.
Now you go to a coffee shop, every coffee shop, like now
you're
all
ahead
the
of your time.
I really was. I really
he
was.
Always
swear
likes,
to God,
he always
was,
loves being like, the trendsetter.
I don't like, I ain't, like, you understand? Like, anyways,
So, you have anything to say on top of that or no?
Nah, just okay. Like,
yeah, just wanted to
I just want to relate with Arya, you know, rebellion.
Yeah.
So, like, what you said before about the importance of sisterhood, especially in the curriculum and just in your life, you know, like the fact that you wanted to start this foundation in memory of your mom and like empower other women after you and, you know, in your time.
Yeah.
But also you give so much credit to your mother for all her sacrifices. And you, like, you can tell, guys, like, she is very humble and very like cognizant about where she came from and like who it is to credit. But then on top of that, you're very like open with your opportunities and your advice and like success story, where you're willing to like share everything with everyone. Like, you're not a gatekeeper,
she's
right?
Not a hater.
Like, she's not a hater. She's you can tell that she's a very genuine person, where like you will ask her one little thing, not even an advice, like you're not even asking her advice, she'll give you more than enough, right?
Yeah.
Like, she'll offer you fabric, like, just like, yeah. Oh, I have thousands of fabric, like, I'll bring it to you for free.
I'm like, Arya, I just asked,
I like, just asked how are you are. Yeah. And like, she'll just offer so much, right? And I'm not gonna say that it's a rare ability or like a rare thing to have, because there are a lot of people that like share their success or share their opportunities, but I feel like from what I've seen and what I've been accustomed to, there are many people that are scared to like share resources
for
and
sure.
help you win, because they feel like there isn't enough room at the table, or they feel like if you win, they're not going to be able to win in some messed up way. So like, what is your stance on just like this gratitude mindset and like this abundance mindset. Like, why are you like this?
Break that down. Break that down.
My mom. It's so cheesy. But my mom is the biggest girl's girl.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've said this to you before. I probably have. But my mom is like the biggest, I mean, like, complimenter.
Yeah.
She's the biggest helper. I think these traits that I love about myself, and I'm grateful that, you know, you guys love too, is just straight from her. And it's so interesting because for her, she's, every time she's done things for people, it's not like she's ever expected anything from it.
Yeah.
And it was never transactional. Mm-hmm. And I think I got a lot from that. And I think, like, the biggest way that both her and I have been hurt, and I think we've been trying to, like, grow from, is when you kind of do things for people and they kind of take advantage of, like, the people pleasing or, like, the kindness and things like that. But we make sure that we never let it change us.
Yeah.
So since I was a kid, my mom has all, I mean, she'll like make us compliment other kids.
Mm.
Where like there's other Bengali aunties. I mean, like I said, I was a terrible student. Mm. I was not a good kid for many, many reasons. There's other Bengali aunties that called up my mom, like, my kid got student of the month. Mm. Or like, you know, my kid, like, you know, or like, you know, my kid's taller than yours. Like classic right. Bengali like kid.
Bragging about the most random things.
Right, yeah. Right. And my mom never like offered that energy back. Mm-hmm. And she never made me feel like, oh, this girl, or, you know, this auntie's daughter is doing better than you are. Mm-hmm. Like, she never let any of that stuff hit us. Like, if you, I mean, you met my sister, my little sister, she can make everybody in the room feel so good.
Yeah.
Like, she'll, it does not, she doesn't have a jealous bone in her body. Yeah. And I'm so similar. And I think we both have that from my mom. Like, she'll just be in a room. She'll compliment everybody in the room. She'll like make everybody else more successful.
Them.
Like, she moved to Buffalo, and I told you guys this, I think earlier this summer, she moved to Buffalo and she's helping like all of these other Bengali families like be homeowners.
Yeah.
Like, she could just be like, no, like, I'm a homeowner and I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna flex on you.
Yeah.
But no, she's like helping all of these Bengali people that she doesn't even know become homeowners, like wealth building and that stuff like that. Yeah. So I think honestly that's where I get it. And I think the reason why I specifically focus on sisterhood is because I see a lot of people, and I think I personally have seen the correlation with maybe not having a strong of relationship with your mom, or maybe having a mom or a woman that, because of trauma or whatever it is, be jealous of other women. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely come across in the generation and the daughter's behavior and stuff like that. So I try to do my part, and I try to, I through the curriculum in my solely, or just like talking to friends, like, I try to lower that defense a little bit and just like compliment, because nothing comes from me.
Yeah.
If I'm giving you my resources, I believe God and Allah will give me 10 times more.
The universe will give me anything. Yeah.
No, and like, you know, the universe will give me 10 times more. I don't feel like I don't feel that scarcity of energy and that scarcity of like resources at all. But I also don't blame other people who have it, because I do think it's a trauma response.
Yeah.
And I do think that's something that people can work through. And I hope that they're not adding more negativity into the world because they have that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's when it starts to become an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I also fully understand where that comes from, because we've all been through a lot of things, or we're taught jealous behaviors and we're taught like, what do you mean she's prettier than you? Like, she can't be, you have to be the prettiest in the room, and you have to be this, and you have to be the smartest, and you have to be all of these things. And it's like, those things come up from childhood. And I think it takes a really long time to unwind and take out.
Mm-hmm.
But the younger you learn that, I think the healthier that relationship with yourself and other women are.
I think like the fact that you haven't hardened just because the world hasn't like reciprocated the same way that you have, or you know, the fact that you haven't just like closed in on yourself just because someone might have used you or taken advantage of you, that's like such a great and like beautiful, admirable thing to do, because like a lot of people get hurt or burned and they're like, you know what, I'm not gonna be as nice anymore. You know what, I'm not gonna like give away all my resources anymore. So the fact that you're still able to like still be welcoming and you know, kind, is says a lot about you, you know. And then on top of that, I think a lot of people don't realize that like when you are like a type of person that shares so much and you're willing to help so much with good intention and like you're genuine about it, that's when the world will reward you, right? That's when all these great opportunities. Obviously, you've worked hard for it, but like that's when mm-hmm. the world will reward you and like give you all these great accomplishments. And when you are like a bitter person or someone that believes so hard in like the scarcity mindset mm-hmm. and you feel like everything is scarce, it's the world will kind of like feel closed off to you, and yeah. you won't reach the things that you wanted to reach because you might reach it and then you'll want more, you know, yeah. or you won't make like genuine connections.
Yeah.
And it says a lot about who you are as a person, because like you're continuously like thanking your opportunities. You're mm-hmm. thanking the people around you who have got you where you are, and you're just like moving forward, you know.
Thank you, sis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're gonna be emotional.
Well said.
This just emotional's gonna be like, this is so soft.
I know, we literally we do this all the time.
This is constant. It's like all between us.
This is just normal life yeah, for us.
Both y'all compliment me now. Shit. Nas, okay, so my soli, you've been working on my soli for the last couple of years. You went to Harvard.
You Why'd you point Harvard? At me when you said no, that?
You didn't go to Harvard. We understand. Harvard,
he like pointed Harvard, at me. I was like, Harvard I did grads. Not go to Harvard.
Harvard grad. So how the hell you get into Harvard?
Yeah.
Because telling me you suck at this, you suck at that. How'd you get into Harvard? And what was Harvard?
I remember the
like?
Day you told me that you got into Harvard. I was like I was so shocked, and I was screaming for you.
If you want
oh, you have a screen
I
recording
yeah,
of it?
Yeah, I have a screen recording of all of the people I love, oh and I told my. Them when I got into Harvard, so I have a screen recording of you.
That's yeah, cute. Like, that, like, I don't even think I knew that you were applying.
Neither did I.
Because it was just, like, so out of bounds, so out of pocket. Mm-hmm. I feel like you were just, like, it was a long shot for you. Like, you long thought shot. In your head it was
definitely,
a long shot.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So you're like, okay, I'm not gonna, like, you know, bring evil yeah, eye to myself. But yeah, like, please, how was this process? How did yeah. you get it?
Girl, right after corporate, actually. Funny enough that you guys brought this up, because this is so, like, perfectly in line. After I was like, okay, I feel like I'm really misaligned with my purpose, and I really want to do, you know, my soli, and I really want to, like I said, I was trying to put like more DEI initiatives and like CSR, like clearly there's this like altruistic or like charity like thing that I kept wanting to do, and it's like clearly I'm not fitting the mold of corporate. So I was like, you know what, like said really peaceful goodbyes, and I was like, okay, I need to understand how to do this nonprofit thing. Mm-hmm. And then I did it on my own for a couple of months after corporate, because the job's gone. I was like, wow, I have a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. And then I just like started to, I was luckily still living in Boston, and I just started to look at programs that are like grow and scale nonprofit. And the Harvard thing is the first thing that came up. Yeah. And I was like, okay, this was divine timing. There was an info session that week wow. when I looked it up, which is crazy. Yeah. And I was in Boston, which is also crazy. I could have been in New York or Buffalo or anything. And I was in Boston, went to the info session. I was like, oh my God, I'm so inspired. This is where I need to be. Like, these are the people that I need to surround myself with. And I was like, this is it. Yeah. So I only applied to one school. And a lot of people like in that time in my life were like, oh, what other grad schools are you applying to, and what are you doing? Like, I'm applying to Columbia and all of these things. I was like, this is it for me.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I was like, either it's this program, it's an entrepreneurship program. I was like, either it's this program or it's no program. Like, either I'm gonna thug it out and I'm gonna do the, you know, the nonprofit stuff like in the real world, figure it out on my own, or it's gonna be this program. Mm-hmm. So basically I applied. It's only the one I applied to, and I still, like, you know, tried to do the nonprofit as best as I can. And then luckily got in. So
it's not even lucky. It's like it was all hard work, and you were meant for that. Like, thank I feel you. Like you credit a lot of your things to like luck and knowing the right people, but you have to be aware of the fact that it's your hard work. Like, it's you as a person, and
thank you.
Like all of the progress that you've made over the past few years. Like, I'm sure there's some sort of luck with it, but it's not like heavily based on that.
Do you know what your acceptance was like based on? Was it based on like previous academic scores or on my soli?
No, I think they look at you pretty holistically.
Yeah
so that's kind of like what they say, is like it's not about any single grade, it's not about the recs, it's not about like anything, it's like who you are as a person.
It's very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
What kind of skills do you think you learned in this entrepreneurship program? Like, I know you loved it, you loved doing this. What do you feel like you were able to translate into your real life experiences?
And what was the worst thing about going to Harvard?
Oh, girl. I could say some stuff.
Top yeah, two. She can.
But okay, the good stuff that I learned is, so I went to the education school, Harvard Graduate School of Education, and I did some classes at the business school. And what I will say from like the, you know, the energy and everything at Harvard is, I felt like I was really alongside my people. Mm. And the only reason is because nobody was, it's kind of similar to what you were saying, like nobody was scarce for resources. I mean, everybody was so excited to help you out. Mm. So I think the biggest thing was the people. And like the classes were amazing and I learned so much. Mm. But like, I don't think that I would have enjoyed that experience as much as the people. Mm. Like, I think I've told you, like all of the friends that I'm even meeting in New York, they're just so excited to just like be a part of your journey or to help you out. And I think that's one maybe misconception about Harvard, that like everyone's just going to be like really uppity and like really like, you know, whatever. But like, at least in my experience, I found that a lot more people than you would think are extremely genuine. And especially the school that I was in, that was like filled with like, you know, social impact leaders, nonprofit leaders, presidents, CEOs, like teachers, like all of these like amazing people who are all in the space to just do good. Like these, I've met some people that were like, you know, in loans for like $50,000, like or whatever it takes to like go there just to make like the classroom of like 30 kids better. And I think that's so beautiful, like to believe in kids and the future of our like education so much that like you're in this program just to like make lives of these kids better. Like, it's just, it was a very, very beautiful energy, I think. And I think that's probably like the best thing that I got out of it, is just like connecting with the people.
Like, I remember you were telling me just how at home you felt with your peers, and how, I mean, you guys like actually hung out outside of school too, but like the fact that you were able to find people that were from like all, you know, brackets of life, and they were able to support you and you were able to support them, like that, I feel like that's the best case scenario. You know, but
what's the worst? I need to know the worst. I'm waiting. What was the worst part about Harvard?
So
because he wants to apply, he wants to go to Harvard.
No, I already I gotta like get my second degree and shit.
Your MBA, your JD.
Nah, whatever's next.
It's so stupid.
So this is, I don't know, I don't think a lot of people know this actually. So this is like very exclusive.
Inside scoop?
This is the inside scoop.
Oh my God. About, here it is, guys.
This
here
is the
is.
Inside inside scoop about Harvard.
The inside scoop about Harvard.
The inside scoop.
Talk to me.
I think that, and I think I've been very vocal about this at Harvard when I was there, they could do a lot better of a job for their first generation students. Like, there was a lot that I noticed that they were lacking in, especially coming from a place like Babson, just like a private private business college, and also in Massachusetts. And it's like, for a school that has like a $50 billion endowment or like something insane, my like God. That, I don't know the exact numbers, but for a school like that, like I expected a little bit more support for the first gen students or the low income students that like didn't have as many resources. And getting your master's and, you know, going to grad school is very similar like to undergrad, where it's like, I'm still the first in my family to get a master's the same way I was the first in my family to get a bachelor's degree. So I still need the support. Like, I still don't know what I'm doing. I need the guidance. I need advisors. I need, and like a lot of the first gen students felt like similarly. It's like, we don't know. We don't have parents that did this before. We don't know what to do. And it's like, for, you know, Harvard and all of their glory and all of the first gen students that they are bringing in that are like extremely impressive and like are doing like three times the work to like get in sometimes because they have to work three times harder to like, you know, have the same opportunities and stuff like that. It's like, I just expected a little bit more support. And I did feel like a little bit lonelier, a little bit more abandoned like by the institution. I think my specific school, the Graduate School of Education, did a really, really phenomenal job trying to help. But like, it's still, as the entirety of the institution, I didn't feel a lot of support. So that's the inside scoop. I think they could do a lot better with the first gen students.
Maybe their thought process is like, oh, like they worked so hard to get into school, they know what they're doing, you know, but maybe there's so much more to it.
Then that means you need to have more first gen students like talking to the administration. Why aren't you asking us how we feel? You know, like, why aren't you asking, like, you brought us here, we make your school look good. So like, I mean, they, like, the first gen students really make Harvard look
course
great. So it's like, you know, why aren't you getting us in a room and asking us like how we could be supported? You know, so it's like, that's my thing.
It's important to have that feedback from the other side as well. You know,
I got a question. You talked about your upbringing, how, you know, you came from very little and then you went to Harvard, and you're probably, you know, there are probably a lot of like low income kids that are at Harvard, but there's also a lot of rich kids that are at Harvard. Same with like coming from where I came from now, like when I started working at like nicer coffee shops in my city, or even now like working in Manhattan, like you're just around a subset of people that like you just never even thought you would be around. And it's hard assimilating to like these types of people that just really have no idea kind of like why you do the things that you do, or like or just kind of anything like that. So my question is like, how did you process the fact that like, oh, like you belong in these spaces, and even though you come from like a completely different background, like how did you convince yourself that like, hey, like this is okay, like I don't come from the same place, but like I'm here and like this is okay? Because I feel like this is something that like I'm going to be struggling with for like a long time, you know. And like I haven't even seen myself getting better at this. So like, how do you kind of process that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, the hardest part of that was more in my undergrad, because I was really around people that were like princes and princesses and people with like private jets. And Babson, because it was like a school filled with students that had so many family businesses, that's where I got really depressed. Yeah. Whereas Harvard was like, oh no, I got this, because I was like, I had gone through the hard part, which was Babson. And just like being next to students, and they're like, this is such an exaggeration, but like one kid basically said like, oh, my dad monopolized wood. And it's like, how do you monopolize wood?
What a flex.
It's crazy.
What the heck?
Like, yeah. I mean, that was like one of the things. I had a Nigerian like princess in one of my other classes.
Yeah, I remember you told me that.
And like, it's crazy. There was one kid, and not in any of my classes, but another friend's class. He had like his security like with him in class.
Oh my God.
Like, he's like, there's just like a man like just like standing right next to him. It was outrageous.
Wow.
So that was, I mean, my most depressive and my most low point right before I had started my Soli was when I was 19. I was in my sophomore year. All of like the freshman happiness, like you're in a new place and everything's beautiful. Like that entire bubble just burst. Mm. And I called my mom crying. I was like, I'm not meant to be here. I was like, again, not doing well in my classes, not diagnosed for ADHD yet. So I don't know that why I'm struggling harder. And I'm also now realizing that, oh, I don't have the foundations to be here. Mm-hmm. And it's like I'm failing these like, what's it called? Like quantum methods of analytics and, you know, like all of these extremely technical stuff or math classes. And I'm like so behind because I have no foundations for any of this. And I'm calling my mom like, I can't. I was like, these kids, his dad monopolized wood.
Like, I'm with the Nigerian princess here.
Literally. Yeah. And I'm like, they've had, I mean, like United Nations education. They've had like private school education. Like, I mean, everyone is doing so good.
Yeah.
And I'm not. And like, I'm not, because I was dealt a bad card. Like, I was dealt terrible cards. I went to not a great public school in New York City. I can't compete. Mm-hmm. And I'm like telling my mom this. I'm like, I can't. She's like, and this was like one of the best things my mom ever did for me. She was like, okay, you can drop out. And I was like,
and
what?
She knows you're gonna rebel.
I don't know. I really don't know what her like psychology was at the time. But she's like, she was like, you don't have to do this. I was like, she's like, I'm not forcing you to do this. Mm. So she's like, you know, if you want, just like come back home, do this fabric store with me. she's like, it's okay. She's like, you have enough education, you're fine.
That's, and that made so you want to do it more.
That's so funny.
I have no idea. Maybe it was reverse psychology.
It probably just took like the weight off of your shoulders. Like, maybe you like subconsciously were telling yourself like, oh, I gotta do this so my mom can say this or that, or whatever was going on in the back of your head. But I think, you know, I think we kind of talk about this a lot, is like when your parents just kind of give you the freedom of choice and the freedom to kind of do whatever you want, it makes life so much easier. And on like one end, you might think that like, you know, having them saying that like, you gotta do this, you use that as like your backbone. But a lot of the time, like when you got freedom, bro, like that's like, especially people that are like neurodivergent, like need like to kind of like live in their own body and in their own brain to like really excel in life, like maybe that was it. I mean, you just got some weight taken off your
shoulders. I think that's what it was. And my mom loves, I don't know if you guys have watched Three Idiots, but it's like, yeah, my mom loves that movie. And I think she's, for like especially like a Bengali immigrant mother, she's like really conscious of mental health. And she could tell I was depressed. Like I was not in a good place. I mean, it's just the imposter you feel the imposter syndrome. You're like, I actually am an imposter, because like I literally I don't fit here at all. So she just like totally relieved of she relieved me of that weight on my shoulders that I have to achieve and I have to do all of these things. But then she had also said, just so you know, just so you remember, that your cousin Farihan Bangladesh, she's probably gonna get married soon, and like you know, she's probably just gonna, she wasn't even able to get where you're able to get. So if you want to drop out now, that's totally fine with me, because you've already passed like the hurdles of all of these other, you know, cousins and everything that you have. I think she was just trying to, from at least from how I interpreted it, she was trying to put into perspective how privileged I actually am and how lucky I actually am to be able to be in this position, when my like cousins, like people from my same family in villages, are having to get married off, and so many other girls are, you know, having to get married off. And I think that was one of my biggest, I think, inspirations to just be like, I'm gonna stick it out, I'm gonna stay here, and I want to start something to like actually help those girls, because I'm obviously very privileged, but they don't deserve that either.
That probably also helped you like think outside of yourself, you know, like when you are going through these depressive episodes or like seeing people that are better than you, you're like constantly thinking like, oh my god, why is this happening to me, how can I get out of this, and you're constantly just thinking me, me, me. But then when you think about like the wider perspective and like bring it outside of yourself, I feel like it helps you stay more tunnel vision with your goal and your purpose. And I don't know, maybe your mom did do it in like a, she didn't mean to do it in that way to encourage you, actually. But I feel like it subliminally worked, you know, because she was like reminding you that like, yeah, I didn't have the opportunity. These people in your family don't have the opportunity. You thankfully do, but it's up to you. Like the ball's in your court now, you know?
Shout out mama.
Shout out mama.
Shout out Saida Mustard.
She knows what she's doing. She knows what she's doing.
All right, I have one last question. So, after you felt this imposter syndrome, especially in undergrad, do you feel like you took any like specific steps, or did you just feel like more of this inner confidence because you worked harder or you were more tunnel vision to be more successful and confident in your grad program? Because like, you know, you, someone who has ADHD, someone who has a hard time focusing on school or you know, being organized or speaking publicly right in front of an audience, like how do you think you were able to succeed at Harvard but also, you know, be a keynote speaker and just like not fake it till you make it, but like how do you think you were able to get from the undergrad Aria to who you were in grad school?
Oh my god, that's such a good question.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think it probably is that confidence of being in places where I felt like I didn't belong from such a young age, and being really comfortable being different in all of these things, and just like kind of coming into my own. And also I think being in a place that valued difference was really helpful. I think like at Harvard there's a lot of people that have achieved a lot, and sometimes that does come off as like braggy or like, you know, and sometimes it is braggy, to be really honest. But I think I'm very, very secure with myself, and I'm very, very okay with myself and confident with myself. So it's like, you know, if you gotta talk about, you know, how you were in like 15 speaking engagements and how you got into every Ivy League and all, I just let them be them.
Yeah, just
you could talk to me about it for as long as you want, and it's totally okay. And I don't know, I guess I'm just like, I think because my intention with being at Harvard was just so like, I'm here for a purpose, and I'm here to learn how to make my nonprofit better, to be able to create lasting impact, to like learn from these people, learn from these professors. It was just, I don't know, and in a really weird way, it did come really easy. Outside of like, you know, the feeling lonely of like about being first generation or low income and like feeling all of those differences, because I had gotten through that obstacle in undergrad, the fact that I was just like so aligned with my purpose in this area and I just knew what I was there for, I think that was a really big reason why I was able to just succeed.
Love it. Love it. Dang.
Oh my god.
She dropped how many gems? Not one, not two, millions.
A lot of them.
Millions of gems just on the floor now.
Yeah, no, like we had that one professor that was like fucking
he was
amazing.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, shout out to him. You can't say my name wrong. So look, this whole episode we've had a really serious conversation this episode. I don't want to be serious anymore. My ADHD, my ADHD
You got it.
I got some questions. I got some rapid fire questions that I'm going to ask you, and
this is like quick, like you have to, on the whim.
You have to answer them, and you have to not think about it.
Okay.
What is the worst piece of advice someone has ever given you?
I don't even know.
Something that someone said that, like, maybe in the moment you're like, oh, that, you know, maybe, but you know, something that, like, you look back, you're like, nah, I went a different way.
Oh my God, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know the answer to that. Why'd you bring up the hardest one first?
I didn't think.
Okay,
this
give
was
me
hard.
Another one. Now.
I didn't think this was. Okay.
Let me think about that one. I actually don't know.
Yeah. All right, we'll start off light. What is something you wish more people knew about you? Something that, you know, you just don't, you know, show online or nothing, you know, but it's just like a real important.
I feel like Mohua can answer this question better than I can. I don't
That's
know.
That's really not the point.
What do you think?
That's genuinely not the point.
The way she just moved it on to me.
I don't know.
Okay. Is it, I, well, I think it's like, all right. I think for you, it's probably your humor.
Maybe, yeah.
Because, like, you got that silly, goofy side, you know? Yeah. But, like, people don't see it because they see you as a person.
Oh, I have an answer. It took me a second. That, I think it's the humor and, like, that, like, silly, goofy side of me. That is really, I think I'm, like, maybe this is a Virgo in me, but, like, it's really hard for that to come out unless, maybe Machine, you're like this too, but until I'm, like, close with somebody, like, that part really comes out, like, all the layers and stuff like that. But the other thing is that I'm, and Mo has made fun of me for this, like, often, but I'm really critical of, like, film and art and movies and stuff like that. Like, I'll do, like, full-blown analysis of just film.
That's
and
so
TV
niche
shows.
Like, for what?
Like, I can probably have another TikTok account with just, like, me, like,
She'll do, like, Gilmore Girls, like, deep dive.
Yeah.
I get
and
it.
I'm like, she shouldn't have been with Jess. Right. And I'll be very passionate about
it. But there's
it.
Okay. A niche for that. There's an audience for that.
I think so too. Yeah. But yeah, these are the things. Yeah.
I love
I
it. Get
is,
into like, yeah. you know,
both
embrace
it. Both y'all are too serious online. Y'all need to chill out. Especially you. You are such a clown in real life, but you go online and you just, you know, just something to think about.
Okay.
You know, chill out a little bit.
Something to think
next
about.
Next question. You want to go back? Did you think of some or
worst
not?
Advice.
All right,
the worst
advice. Next question. Aria, what is your secret talent?
Ooh.
What's your secret talent?
Can I use the film critic one again?
No, you cannot.
Please, give me something else.
I paint.
You paint? Yeah, I was going to say you paint.
Yeah, I paint.
It's a secret.
So, yeah, I guess
you guys now know
talent.
That she paints.
Yeah.
That's it? Like, what, like, that you're proud of?
That
like,
she,
I'm, like, I'm really good at chess. Like, I'm really, really good at chess.
Interesting.
And I love sharing that. I'm proud of it. You
Mine is hula hooping.
I
stop.
Hey, no
hey,
one.
Hold on.
I have one.
Why do you always say this? You can't. You can't.
Yes,
hula hoop.
I can hula hoop.
No, you are.
You
such,
gave me a very
average.
You gave
hula
me a very buoyant hula hoop when you made me try. You have to give me one that has some like pressure in it. That
prove
I
it. We need. We need to see videos
okay,
of you hula hooping right, now.
Next. What's yours?
No one can beat me in Mario Kart.
Ooh, oh, that's a big thing because he's hard with that.
Aria Mustari, please.
Yeah, because he's gonna take that.
No, no one can beat me.
Okay, we'll play
tonight. No one's been able
we'll
to beat
you
me.
You don't know who you're talking to. Aria Mustari, what is your hot take?
Ooh, hot take about anything.
And please make
so
it hot.
Many.
Please make it like
I have
spicy.
So many.
Do you want to hear hers? Hers sucks.
What?
I say it every single time. Hers is. Popcorn is not the appropriate snack for a movie theater.
That's your hot take.
That's so bad.
Is that okay?
She thinks chips are better. How?
Oh my God.
That makes sense.
Maybe that is hot. I mean, you guys are like, you disagree.
Why are you mad? Oh, okay. Anyway,
you
that's yours.
One.
It depends. I have so many hot takes.
Please, your spiciest one. Like, I'm going to make a clip out of this. Like, whatever
most
is like
cancelable stuff.
The most
he's
viral
for the
topic.
Most cancelable thing.
Go ahead.
No, give me a topic. I can't even think. Like, it's so such a white space.
Fashion, New York City.
About just like
food.
Like current times, like current, like maybe like the political world or like current, like movies going on, current, you know, like TikTok. I don't know.
This might be a hot take for New Yorkers. I think Boston gets too much hate.
Ooh.
I think Boston gets the appropriate amount of hate.
That's why it's a hot take.
So what's so good about
so
Boston?
I think this is my hot take. It's been like this for a while. When I came to Babson, when I went to my undergrad, and it's obviously very close to Boston, I hated it because I'm a New Yorker.
Right.
And it's just normal. You just come with the DNA to hate Boston
right.
for no good reason.
Right.
So for like 3 out of the 4 years, I absolutely hate Boston. I have no grounds to really hate Boston
because
right. I don't even know the city like that, but I just absolutely hate it. And after I graduate, I'm still in Boston. And I'm like, wait, the city is really cute And I, this is my hot take, I don't think it's comparable to New York. I think Boston's really charming, really quaint, really old New England. You could walk, walk from one part of the city to the other in like an less than an hour. There's different things about it that you can't get in New York. Like, I don't have to like schedule out brunch weeks in advance. Like, I could just be with my friend, just be like, you want to get brunch? All right, yeah, let's go get brunch. Right. So it's like, it's quaint, it's cute, it's tiny. I don't think it's similar to New York City, and I think it should stop being compared to New York City.
That's
my hot take.
I don't mind Boston. Boston was cool.
It was all right. It was cute. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we got cannoli.
Felt very Italian, yeah.
Walked by the pier. Felt very Paul pure, Revere. Yeah.
It's cute.
Paul Revere. We saw the Paul Revere. We didn't see the Boston Tea Harbor, though.
Do we not?
No, we didn't. There's a ship that has a tea on it.
Still around?
You guys were also sick as hell.
Yeah.
You were sick.
Dead. Oh, my goodness.
You were sick.
Okay. Do you still not have an answer for, like, the worst advice?
If so, I have a serious one. I don't have a.
It could be.
One.
I guess like it could. It could.
Okay.
Be
what's the worst piece of advice?
Yeah, it don't gotta be funny. Yeah, just like, you know, just something.
I don't. That's too like.
That counts.
All right. Advice. I guess we don't have to talk about that.
Give me another one.
Yeah.
Give me another question.
Oh, last one.
Yeah. Like, finish off with a silly one.
Last one. Okay. What is your ideal like Friday?
Like no work,
like you just got a check, like you is chilling, like everything is good, mother is straight. What are you doing on Friday? Talk to me.
Okay, that's the ADHD in me, but I have like three answers.
Okay,
one is if I don't feel like up to like going out, just staying at home, board games, like quiet little, like, you know, like friend night or something like that. Mario Kart, beating everybody,
right,
especially you, Mushnoon.
Relax.
And two is I love going out with my friends to a club and listening to Bad Bunny and just
relatable,
having all my girls shake their ass on me, and I love it.
Third
is just like quiet night and like movie night. Same thing. So those are probably agreed.
Such a bad answer. Like, I asked for one. She gave you
options.
Just say everything.
Okay.
I don't got much more written. You got anything else?
No, I don't
got
anything.
Top off the episode?
No, but we usually just like, you know, finish it off with like a little 10-second advice.
Yeah,
like a little quickie.
We do 10-second
advice.
Doesn't
have to be related to the episode. Doesn't even have to be like useful.
It could just be whatever is, you know, it you can learn
just,
today.
Yeah, it can just be, you know, invest in a Dyson. Invest in a Dyson and your hair will look beautiful and shiny.
If Dyson
like
was sponsoring this, I would have said that. Dyson,
but
you
Dyson,
should.
You're not.
You should sponsor.
I'm taking it back.
That's not bad.
What's yours?
If your plants aren't growing, it might be time to repot them. Maybe, you know, you might be watering them appropriately, giving them proper sunlight, nutrition, soil, everything, but maybe you just gotta repot them. Bigger pot, add some more manure, some more
manure,
kind of succulents going around, it'll start growing.
Remember when someone called you mushroom manure?
I've been getting that my whole life. That's not nothing.
What's your 10 second piece of advice?
Mine is serious.
Okay, go ahead. No, I love it. End
I know,
with the
Mushnoon's so tired.
No, go
end
ahead.
He doesn't like me being
last
serious.
Bit. Last bit.
If you're trying to do anything or if you're starting anything, just remember to lead with empathy.
That's true. That's true.
That's a good one.
She popped off with that
that's
one.
That's a good one.
All right, where can we find you, Aria?
You could find me on, I guess, my Instagram, Aria Mustari. You could always send me an email too, if you ever want to connect.
Any business propositions?
Yeah, any business propositions. If you want to be like Mushnoon's sister and be an angel to our foundation, please feel free. Yeah.
And so, check out my Soli everywhere.
Cool. Thank you so much for Aria.
Thank
for
you so
coming
much.
On the podcast.
Thank
today.
You guys
I'm
for
so
having
happy
me.
We finally got you. I just wanted to mention, I think my favorite thing about you, Aria, is the fact that, you know, you talked lightly about everything that you've been through, but I think you've been able to remain very warm and lighthearted and not, she mentioned it earlier, but not hardened and not like shriveled up by everything. And like, you know, I talk to you and it feels like, you know, we're talking like kids and we're like just chilling and like it's, we've all been through a lot, but you know, you don't let that kind of be like the book ending for you. You know, like there's so much more to you that, you know, you've been able to grow from. And And yeah, I'm just very happy we got to do this. So.
Thank you guys. You guys are the best podcast hosts, by the way.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
And thank you guys so much for inviting me and sharing me with your audience.
Thank you so much, guys. Yeah. We love you so much. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to like and subscribe. Leave a little rating.
Like
do
and
that.
Subscribe.
Please. But we'll see do you that. Next week. Allah Hafiz.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a 3-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.